Tommy, interesting little angle that I want to look at involving the Edmonton Oilers and the salary cap. Because the Oilers, and we saw this a few years ago with Evan Bouchard, because the Oilers are going to start the season in LTIR, right? They're going to start, Klefbom's going to be there, they're not going to wait and then put him on out, he's going to be there right from the start. And so once you're into LTI, like they are, any performance bonuses that a player has, they have to be accounted for on opening day. So on the first day, not on the first game, but the first day. And so a guy like Philip Broberg, who has $850K in performance bonuses. So if he isn't on the opening day roster, if he gets called up, let's say in November or December, then he, even though his cap hit is 863, he actually would technically count as 1.7 because it includes his performance bonus potential. So you look at the orders and him and Holloway, I'm curious if we might see some salary cap maneuvering by Edmonton if they feel that those two guys are going to play some games this year. And they're going to be tight to the cap anyway. If they have them both on there for the day, for the first day, then their performance bonuses, even though if they don't hit them, they're just accounted for. And then if they send them down when they recall them, they just count as their cap hit. So it's kind of interesting to watch to see how that's going to play out. And like Holloway might make it anyway. You know, Broberg, I'm not sure because of, you know, but Broberg looked good in the bubble. It's just, it's an interesting little side note because of the LTI for the Oilers.
So then cap gymnastics comes into play big time again. This is something that capologists, every team has them, were busy with. That I didn't even know about. I'm glad you brought it up. That's interesting. Now, Griggs, this immediately comes to mind if, hypothetically, that were to happen. Those players, one of them, both of them, whatever, if they have great camps, like you mentioned, end up on the roster. And then what if they are trying to work around the cap and use those gymnastics to their advantage on the executive side? What happens if the guys are there and then fans, I could see it saying, why aren't you using these guys? Why aren't they playing? But if they're playing well in camp, then I could see why they would be around and earning that spot. But that's interesting because as soon as you give that little sliver of hope, the conversation starts. And as we know, sometimes those conversations can snowball into huge thought processes. And then all of a sudden we're debating the benefits of keeping a guy up, keeping a guy down. But I didn't know that about the cap gymnastics. And it's going to continue, I guess, for the foreseeable future with this flat cap and the way everything's gone with COVID throwing a massive wrench into the finances of the hockey world.
And the other thing is PTOs. The Oilers have tons of contracts. Even when Yamamoto gets signed, and I have an article coming up. I was looking at some recent comparables because there's been a lot of RFAs with no arbitration rights who have signed recently, similar to Yamamoto. And, you know, I look at those numbers, and, like, Yamamoto played 81% of his 5-on-5 ice time last year. He was on the ice with either McDavid or Draisaitl. And so no other player had that luxury, and he didn't produce with it. Like, I'm not sure what his negotiation power. Well, he doesn't have much when you have no arb rights. And
yep.
Like, you know, like, I don't know if Brendan Hagel, you know, you look at Dylan Dubé's contract. Obviously, the Yamamoto camps might say, hey, that's the number you look at, of course, right? But it'll be fascinating to me to see what he gets. I think his contract's going to start with a one, for sure. I don't see him getting $2 million. And I think it might be closer to 1.5 than it is closer to 2, like maybe 1.6, maybe 1.7. We'll see. But they got him. Cooper Marody will sign a two-way deal. PT, that would only give him 43 contracts. So they have tons of opportunities if they want. There's some defensemen on PTOs. But do you, like, if the order, if you were Tyler Ennis and the Oilers offered you a PTO, would you do it? Like, would you sign here? Would the Oilers want him? Do you see any fit there to bring him back on a PTO?
I like the person. I enjoy the player. I know he's a little bit older and long in the tooth. But if I was Ennis and put in that situation, if it was my only option, then yeah, you'd probably try to come to camp and make a go of it and see if you can win a spot. But, you know, you have a pretty good understanding of what the roster probably will look like. I know things can change. Injuries do occur. All those things happen in a training camp. But I don't know if there's a room for a guy like Ennis here with all of the bodies up front. And unless, like I said, if it's like his only option in terms of a PTO, then yeah, you'd take it in that scenario. But Griggs, if he's got a few others where he looks at a roster and sees some openings and figures he can still contribute to an NHL team, which I think he can, obviously not to the same level he has over the course of his career, and especially in the meat of it when he was in his prime, I'd probably be looking elsewhere. Although, good guy, good Edmonton boy, and he's been a good player in the NHL for a long time. Hopefully he finds something. I don't know if it's likely with the Oilers, but it's been interesting seeing him around here as a player in orange and blue for the last couple of years.
Tom Cazzola joins us. Tom, the Elks' positive news is that they've had no more positive tests. I think that's 4 days now. So they're on pace to get back on the field for Wednesday after not practicing since they beat BC and they had the week off, and then they had the, you know, then they had the game off. So you look at this team, they finally got a win. That they looked better in that game, but they haven't played since. They haven't practiced since. What do you expect on Monday?
Ooh, well, okay, let's see what they do when they get on the field Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Calgary was close yesterday with Winnipeg. I want to believe that the extra time, the extra game that they get to study up on the Stamps will help them. I want to look at it in a positive light. Sounds like, you know, Farhan Lalji's been putting it out there that the players that did test positive for COVID generally have been either asymptomatic or just minor symptoms of COVID, which is good to hear. So as long as there's no long-term effects and these guys are good to go, injuries shouldn't be an issue. Guys have had an extra week to get healthy and ready to rock for that Labor Day Classic. So I almost want to say that maybe it does give them an advantage, and they could take advantage of a Calgary team that's clearly struggling. I know Jake Mayer has been, he got the good debut, got the win, but then didn't work out as well yesterday, although they were still close and could have won it on that last second field goal, but Paraday missed. I expect them to be okay. I think that they have a good chance. They're going to be confident after what they did in BC. They played really well. Defense, good. Offense, good. Red zone, finally converting. James Wilder Jr. playing very well. Ellingson breaks out in that game. So these guys, I'm sure, are hungry to keep that going. It gets obviously interrupted a little bit. And maybe they see an opening and a bit of a crack in the Stamps with their positivity, with their confidence. And they could take advantage because the Labor Day Classic has not been well or kind to this double E green and gold team in, what, the last decade or so? So maybe here's an opportunity to take advantage and go into Calgary and get a big win.
Tom Cazzola joins us. I'm at SportsCenter, TSN 1260. Tommy, what do you make of DeChambeau? And, like, he seems to be a guy that a lot of people don't like. Like, he asked Cantley to stop walking yesterday. Now, Cantley afterwards said, hey, I didn't think it was a big deal. They'd asked us to pick up the pace. I'm kind of a slow walker, so I left early. He said something, no big deal. All he did was ask him, hey, don't walk during my shot. Right? And
yeah.
Some of those guys are very, you know, that's the mind games, whatever. You did have a fan say, using the Brooksy line, and that seemed to set him off a bit. But I'm sorry, like, if that's all a fan says, like, he didn't even swear. He didn't call you a name. He just said, attaboy, Brooksy. Like, that's not something to cause you to freak out and ask a fan to get kicked out. Hey, I don't believe you should chirp players in a derogatory, like, if you're derogatory, hey, you bleep and you know what and anything like that I don't believe in. But that type of line, like, that shouldn't be setting off a pro athlete. If it is, I have more of an issue with the athlete.
Yeah, and this is, you know, I'm sure we're going to be talking about DeChambeau and his antics for years to come, unless he just has a total about face. That doesn't surprise me. Okay, the Cantley thing, asking him not to walk, gamesmanship, you know, they go six playoff holes and Cantley pulls it off. I get that you try to get in the other guy's head a little bit, and that's one way to do it. And you know, you want to follow etiquette. This is the best tour in the world. These are the best golfers in the world. That I'm okay with. Losing it on a fan that says Brooksy, that, you're right. It's not derogatory. It's not ridiculous chatter or chirping from a fan. Like, if it's not over the line whatsoever. So that reminds me of a year or two ago, Greg's. They were in a tournament, and DeChambeau was hitting out of the bunker. And there's a camera guy. The biggest names always have at least a couple of camera people, audio technicians following them around because, you know, Saturday, Sunday, they're what everybody wants to see, especially if they're contention, and that's what the broadcasters do. And DeChambeau hit a bad shot out of the sand, and he turned around and he snapped on the camera guy. that to me was one of those examples of like, hey man, grow up. Don't be a brat. You're a pro. Set a good example for up and coming golfers. Don't be that snooty crybaby, if you will. And then wanting to get that fan ejected for calling him Brooksy, that screams of the same type of mindset where you just kind of shake your head and go, come on, man, like, be a pro. Carry yourself with some class. I know you don't like the Brooksy thing, but it's not like he's saying anything about your mother or anything like that. Like, these people pay a lot of money to go see these golfers do what they do, and you got to take the heat sometimes, and it's just part of the work that they are a part of and what they do, and that's their profession. So that part I don't like. The gamesmanship I don't mind. I respect the hell out of what he does with the mad scientist kind of motif, but it's the other stuff where I just look at it and go, come on, dude, be better.
Yeah, like when I first saw, oh, geez, you got into a fan, I was like, oh, geez, what did this guy say? And then you read, you're like, what? Come on. That's all he said? Like, I'm sorry. That's not one to get upset about. And hey, DeChambeau, the thing is, I don't like DeChambeau, but I don't dislike DeChambeau. He's just like a golfer on tour. I'm like, hey, the guy's pretty good. He can pound the ball. You know, there's some interesting stuff that he thinks about. He definitely views the game a little bit different than a lot of people, which is fine. And I actually think it's good for the game to have, if there's a little bit of a heel, when there's somebody in hockey that everybody dislikes, Tkachuk, right? People, like, he's better. Matthew Tkachuk single-handedly reignited the Battle of Alberta. It's true. Right? Like, it's true.
Yeah.
And so you can have that is good. Golf's a little bit different because there's obviously not the physical, emotional element to it. He just kind of comes across as, you know, kind of a smug personality. But I actually think it's good for golf because I think people will watch just to see him lose as much as some will watch to see him win.
Totally. It's a soap opera within the tour. And I think I like Koepka a little bit more, but even Koepka has his moments where you're like, well, there's the side of Koepka where you're like, I don't really like that side of him as well. But when it comes to these two battling with one another, which I think will go on for years, it'll be part of their careers, obviously. It'll be a huge storyline moving forward if they're both contenders basically every tournament. I'll take Koepka's side for the most part, but at the same time, there's some qualities about him that aren't as likable either, and they're no angels, both of them, but they have played this, I think. There's some strategy to the way they've done this, but then you see DeChambeau go off on a fan like that, and you go, ah, buddy, it's just disappointing. But you know what? It's gotten us talking. It gets people outside of the golf world talking, and for them it just creates a bit of a stir and some controversy and brings some attention and eyes to the tour, which is always a good thing.
Did you read the story how a high school football team convinced ESPN to show the game, but they're not really a high school football team?
This is unbelievable. They're an online charter team. They went 0-6 last year. They're called Bishop Sycamore. They lied their way into getting ESPN to air their game. Greggs, they told ESPN and the promoter that booked these games and set them up that they had numerous D1 prospects on their roster. They had none. They played 2 days prior. It's a safety issue. Yeah. And they end up on ESPN. If you see clips of the broadcast, the broadcasters were like throwing out trivia about Canton and the Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton, Ohio, because of how bad this team at Bishop Sycamore got killed. It was like a 58-0 loss, blowout, and all ESPN had to do was Google this team. They've only been in existence for a couple of years. Online charter school, 0-6 last year. The team that beat them, IMG Academy, crushed them last year too. It's ridiculous how those things still slip through the cracks at even like a network like ESPN. So it happens, and it's shady. It is totally shady. And if you're running that school, what are you doing? Do you think that that's good attention or bad attention? It just makes you look bad, doesn't it?
Well, 100% it makes them look bad, and it also makes ESPN not look great, that they're just like, hey, wait a second, we can't even confirm Now, obviously, maybe they just assume that the school's not making up. Oh, these are the guys on our roster and they're D1 prospects. It's like, well, I don't know. They weren't even on the roster. Like, they obviously didn't do much research. Who's ever in charge of that? Likely is not having themselves a great day. And then on the other side of things, Trent Dilfer, not how you should be coaching players.
Yeah, some video popped up. And this is high school football too. Dilfer's a pretty prominent high school football coach in the Tennessee area, I think around Nashville, and he kind of ragdolled one of his players, and someone put a TikTok video of it up. I don't like this. It didn't look like, watching the video the first time, I'm like, well, maybe he was diffusing a situation on the sidelines. You know how things can get emotional, especially high school football. It's a big deal, especially in the southern states. We all know that. And maybe he was diffusing a situation, but it didn't look good. I know I sent you that video, and to me, I think that's way over the line. He addressed it, but man, you're not dealing with, I know he coaches some NFL guys in the offseason too. He works with Tua and all that, but You can't be doing that to 16, 17, 18-year-old kids that are trying to make a name for themselves and get that Div 1 scholarship like he's got on his team. But, Greggs, you saw that video. That was over the line, I think.
Oh, yeah. To his credit, he apologized afterwards. Right. Said he singled out the player when he shouldn't be. And the player's like, hey, what are you doing? Right. I guess every mistake now is on video, which is maybe good or bad. You know, we're humans. A lot of people will do the wrong thing at the wrong time without any major consequences. Like, you know, hey, you have a heated conversation with the player. It's not ideal. But if that's a one-time thing for the coach, right, all it does is raise the questions, how many other times has it happened? So that's the only question that's going to be answered. Tommy, have yourself a good one. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good, Greg. See you tomorrow.